All right, everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Super Freak with Tally. Today, we're going to talk about the trauma behind emotional intelligence and why being chill, in quotes, is killing you. I'm also going to explore something most of us were never taught to question, essentially what it costs to be easy to love and what it means when your safety, identity, and relationships have been built around being digestible. Very important things to cover because we are in a time period where we are self-editing and limiting our ability to be seen and heard. And there's a reason for that. So with that said, let's jump into this. As a note, always appreciate the reviews. Thank you so much. We are a small and mighty community, you know, nearly 100,000 downloads, over 83 countries now listening to this, and this is all organic, guys, and that's because you guys share this podcast with other people, and I very much am in gratitude of that. Thank yourselves for continuing to listen to this. You'll see as you continue to, let's say, move back to the beginning part of when this podcast launched till now, the way the resonance has changed, the way the information is being distilled, all of this is a reflection of the work that we were all doing together. And so I just wanted to take a moment to thank you all for continuing to be a process of that. Okay, emotional intelligence. First, we praise it, okay? Society rewards chillness. We celebrate the ones who regulate the room, who hold space, who stay calm, who make others feel seen. And you might be saying that these are all extremely good qualities, and they are. However, what if the emotional fluency people admire in you, right, was born out of trauma? And I'm going to talk about the difference between embodied emotional fluency, like really having high levels of EI, emotional intelligence, versus this sort of muted, numbed out way of experiencing yourself because of trauma. Like, what if being chill is your nervous system performing safety in an environment where it was never guaranteed? So I'm going to decode the hidden costs of being emotionally intelligent when what looks like wisdom is actually hypervigilance, what feels like connection is actually appeasement, and what gets called maturity is really self-erasure. So growing up in high empathy, low safety environments teaches you a very specific skill set. And by high empathy, I'm meaning those parental or caretaking archetypes that move into victim consciousness right away. They fall, they collapse into the emotion of whatever is being experienced, and then they in turn reinforce learned helplessness. So if people leave conversations with you feeling seen, soothed, understood, and you often leave feeling completely erased, okay, you've somehow cultivated a strategy of making people feel amazing around you, and you feel like you didn't get a question asked, you didn't get anyone around you out of several conversations with your family actually asking you, like, what's on your heart today? How did that make you feel? What comes up for you? Here's what I'm present to. If you leave a situation feeling erased, okay, it doesn't feel strange to you. It feels familiar. That is because when love is conditioned around your usefulness, you learn to be useful. So codependency 101 tells us that if I can't be loved, then I'm going to be useful. So you learn to co-regulate people who never learn to regulate themselves. You essentially become a balm, a buffer, a mirror, and in the process, you abandon yourself without even realizing that you've done it. So in depth psychology, okay, this is called emotional parentification, when a child becomes essentially responsible for a parent's emotional state. And you have learned how to do this. Your nervous system knows how to clock a room in 360. You know exactly what's going on in your 6, your 3, your 12, and you know the shift in a room and the way that the room will reorganize itself around that shift, and you immediately know how to move into a particular way of being in order to help the environment move away from chaos and towards some type of equanimity. And again, there's a lot of effort. This is a lot of work. You're working really hard to do that, but you don't really think that you are. Now, there's a completely different way to stabilize a field without abandoning yourself, which I'll talk about as we move throughout this podcast. And it's essentially the apex of what this quantum psychosomatic frequency work is, which is helping you deconstruct all of the things that you aren't and remove back to, and then reconstruct an identity that is operating from your blueprint, your original blueprint. So there is no discoherence in your field. Your frequency, field, and form are all operating in the same harmonic, constantly reorganizing to the highest timeline. That's the stuff you want, and it's entirely possible. So what isn't talked about enough in parentification is what it does to your identity. It doesn't just shape your childhood, it essentially rewires your sense of self. So you become so fluent in others, you forget how to hear yourself. And over time, your inner world goes completely quiet, kind of blurry, not really sure of yourself. You move in. This is especially particularly, relevant, excuse me, for all the caretakers, those who have the savior kind of complex or savior programming. You feel everything and nothing at once. So if that's you, okay, your empathy becomes armor. Your intuition becomes defense. This is not love. It is deep states of survival. So children wired for connection in unstable systems will develop high interpersonal sensitivities. Okay, it's a trait that's actually linked to complex PTSD. And what we call in, let's say, the psychosomatic world, fawn responses. Those who have a fawn response have very, very high empath programs. Those who have empath programs have very, very high service contracts. Think about healthcare workers, think about ER workers, think about those who are caretakers. Okay, they move into a fawn response and they quite literally shut down. Now, these are the types of people who will register as being incredibly chill and calm and the one to talk to and the one who is being rewarded for quote unquote holding tremendous space. And people will come to them and they will unleash. Okay. They were like, oh my God, do you have a minute? Can I just talk to you about all of this? Like, feel the frequency shift of that just in the tone. Like, to me, that level of energy coming at me, I will deflect that in 5 seconds. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I need you to calm all the way down. You're not going to discharge all of this discoherence into my field, darling. So go ahead and anchor yourself in your body. What's really going on here? And let's drill down into the pattern after you have yourself. But those who are chronically fawning, okay, under the guise of being chill, will abandon themselves in that moment. And you can see it, okay? You can see the eyes glaze over. You can see them just sit there and hold. And they'll be told that they're fantastic listeners. And if you're tracking with this, this is something, this, I'm speaking directly to you. Be told that they're such fantastic listeners, but when really, they're absolutely shutting down inside. So what's happening here is because a fawn response is deeply correlated with abandonment wounding and not having emotional needs met early on in childhood. And that looks like someone who has taught you how to regulate your nervous system in distress. Okay. Your nervous system then learns to scan for threat in the micro, like a sigh, a shift in tone, a subtle glance. Each moment becomes like data to help you shape shift, if you will, into the safest version of you. It's like highly adaptability here. These strategies become so ingrained in you that you become rewarded for it. And that's kind of the twist. You're called insightful, very emotionally intelligent, that you hold tremendous space. People love talking to you and they don't see the parts of you that had to disappear to make them feel safe. And how could they? You don't let them close enough. And if you do let them close enough, right, this archetype will attract people who have wild levels of edge and they do not like vulnerability. They do not know how to like access that parts of themselves. They want closeness. They'll be very A-type, very controlling, and they will surround themselves with people who have wild levels of non-boundaried empathy who collapse in the presence of that to validate this dynamic, okay? Non-vulnerable meets hyper-seeking vulnerable, okay? To fulfill the pattern of not being worthy, not being loved, and abandoning yourself. That dynamic fulfills itself, okay? These are frequency distortion patterns that accommodate each other. So again, we will reincarnate our childhoods in our relationships until these things are reconciled. We repeat what we don't complete epigenetically, physically, somatically, cognitively, behaviorally, emotionally, etc. Everything is a recursive pattern that will oscillate in shadow, okay, in inverted patterns, meaning it will just loop. It'll keep you looping in dense, low vibrational harmonic energy, and or once those patterns are completed and you no longer have to repeat those things, it can actually recurse in fun and joy and synchronicity and possibility and constant level up. And the reverb and the feedback loop doesn't have to be fueled by so much pain. It's real. It's happening. I'm experiencing it and have experienced it and will continue to do so. And that is why I'm continuing to share this information with you. So another effect of what the fawn response will do in collaboration with kind of the dark side of emotional intelligence, in quotes, is that that emotional intelligence as a trauma response is completely encapsulated with a tremendous amount of grief. And that grief is quiet at first, okay? It accumulates in the pauses that you don't fill, in the needs you don't name, in the way your, let's say, tighter smile becomes a reflex, or the way your body posture slightly shifts when someone actually rejects you again and you harden to have to defend your way of being, right? It essentially, being easy to love in this case starts to feel like being loved for your absence. Did that land? So essentially, you are being rewarded for abandoning yourself. Let's pause here for a second. Because the fawn response doesn't always look like trauma, okay? It can look like warmth and care and stability, being the strong one. But underneath it, it's a body locked in performance, in appeasement. It's a nervous system that's learned the only way to stay safe is to disappear nicely and to be agreeable and to continue to keep the family together by being over-responsible. And then resentment builds, and then these chandelier moments happen where you explode. And no one knows where it came from, because there's been this silent scorn inside of you that has been building and building and building. And then a fawn response actually moves into rage, silent rage, sometimes active rage, deep states of grief, frustration that you've had to play this judgment of self, that you've lost time, that you're off path, etc. So what then happens under these particular, let's say, parameters is you start performing connection instead of experiencing it. Or you desperately overwork for vulnerability in relationships that are no longer serving, where you feel like you're doing all of the heavy lifting and you're not being met. And that not being met, that unmet need, is also fulfilling. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy or program of, see, I told you, the abandonment, the unlovability, I can't really have these relationships. I still want this relationship to work. I want this dynamic to be different. I want this person to change, instead of actually blessing them and changing yourself, okay? Changing your own resonance, your own frequency signature, right? Collapsing these patterns inside of yourself, leveling yourself up and having yourself so hard that the field organizes automatically around you. It's way, way, way more efficient. So you kind of, instead of mistaking fitting in for belonging, the question then becomes, if I stopped being this way, would they still stay? So here's the part most people miss, okay? The brain doesn't distinguish between physical pain and emotional pain. that pang of disapproval or that withdrawal in terms of eye contact, it lights up the same region as basically a broken bone. So when your system learns that being too much might cost you connection, you dull your edges, okay? You self-edit, you trim your truth, okay? You shrink, you dim your light. You become a version of yourself that's easy to love, but impossible to access. So you harden generally and then make yourself available for only some people that feel safe, but desperately wanting to have connection. So it's like you'll vacillate between an overshare and then hyper levels of reservation. All of this is very indicative to PTSD, okay? Trauma response PTSD. So there's not just an emotional cost to all of this. It's also biological. So that chronic appeasement, that people pleaser, it keeps your HPA axis, okay, your stress system, on overdrive. So you're tired, but not just like I need a nap tired, like I mean deeply systemically depleted, because your body's been carrying the weight of being agreeable. Every time you abandon yourself to keep the peace, you reinforce the belief that your truth is dangerous, that your needs are negotiable, or that your fullness is too much. So you try harder, okay? And then sometimes get colder, sometimes get more guarded, but that's just another mask, another performance. You go from over-accommodating to over-defending. Neither one brings you home, really. Back to yourself, back to the center of your own gravity. Being cold doesn't undo the wound, it just buries it deeper. And then essentially you create spiritual bypassing where different aspects of performance take place. You know you're off, your body starts to pay the price, but it becomes such a heavy burden, okay? The, let's say, baggage and the storage of all of this emotion becomes such a heavy burden that it's almost like you pay now and you pay late, or you pay later and you have to choose your hard, and you know it and you still don't actually move towards resolving it. That's where things get really tricky, because then you lock those patterns in even deeper and the work gets harder. So the fact that you guys are doing this work now, brava, okay? Like I said, you pay now, you pay later, you got to choose your hard. And once you actually start gaining enough momentum to pull yourself up and out of the sticky patterns, you break through, and you actually do break through different ceilings. That's why group work is so important, because you create enough torque and you create enough spiritual mass to move you through those sticky patterns. So you might as well rip the Band-Aid off and get in there and get consistent with what the work is, not through individual sessions, but through actual group work in some way. Finding either this podcast as a salt, like a balm for you, okay, as your mind continues to understand the language of experience, then moving into groups to really start moving through heavier, stickier patterns. And it will get messy. And the way that you change your relationship with how you evolve is everything. Because if you sign up for all of it, then you sign up for all of it. I'd rather have a headache now than Alzheimer's later. Make sense? Okay. So in addition to the frequency work, if you find yourself in this dynamic, and this podcast has been able to help you create some language around how you've been experiencing yourself, okay, the way out isn't performance. It's radical levels of honesty. Start naming the feeling and naming the emotion, not just with others, but with yourself. Okay, so kind of let the silence stretch before you rush to fill it. Say, I don't know, when you don't. Let yourself need things. Let yourself say no. Let yourself be inconvenient. Let people meet you. Not the regulated version of you that exists to soothe them, but the vulnerable aspect of you. I need help. So here's what radical honesty looks like when you're actually aware of the fact that you just listened to somebody discharge a bunch of garbage into your life and field without asking if it was a good time. If you are present to it, which is what this work is all about, okay? And I know you know the type who calls you, who launches into talking all about them, and then just like vomits their bullshit and their bad day onto you and you take it and absorb it, if you can get slightly present to that, just say, oh, you know what? Can I just give you a quick call back? Or there's a call coming in I have to take. Let me call you back. It breaks their loop and protects you. So create some type of, let's say, safe word, okay, for yourself, or safe trigger for yourself that will stop that pattern in its tracks, and then immediately start getting into some kind of pattern work if you can. I have the pattern superhero. I have a set of questions that I've asked a bunch, which I'll go through now. Okay, what is actually happening in my body? Where did I tighten up? Where did I fawn? Where can I protect myself? Where can I call that person back and just let them know that's what was coming up for me? I have about, or give yourself parameters. I have about 15 minutes before I have to jump off. What's going on? So give yourself parameters. So first, set a boundary for yourself if you can. Give yourself some parameters and start naming, like radically naming how you're feeling, and then check back into your body. Reorient yourself and then make a decision and then act on the decision. So ironically, in the military, they have an acronym. It's called OODA, okay? Observe, orient, decide, and act. So throughout your experience with all of this, observe your details, observe the details of your environment, okay? Reorient yourself through screen change, boundary, creating limitations on a call. You know, I've got about 10 minutes before I've got to jump off. No problem, we'll connect at a later time. See if you can fully step into that. Contrary action, okay? Hard override if you're in a shutdown. When you're in a shutdown, you're in a shutdown. There's just nothing that's going to be able to pull you kind of likely out of that unless it just gets so uncomfortable, right? This is where a lot of the work and the frequency work is beneficial for you, because it will start to shift that response of absolute and total complete collapse to being able to have some kind of awareness to like turn the corner a little bit, shift into a different gear. Okay. Got to change the screen if you can. Set up your parameters. Ask these questions. What's going on? What's the pattern here? What's actually happening? How is my body responding? What side of it is it on? Okay. Is it on my right side? Is it on my feminine side? Where did I learn how to do this? What is the language around what I'm experiencing right now? And then if you can lean into the feeling, especially if because of the empath program, you're going to be like, I feel so sad. I feel so overwhelmed. I can't really explain it, but my body is shutting down. Okay. You're moving into polyvagal. This is a complete and total shutdown, right? The button is turned off. The nervous system physically can't handle one more ounce of disappointment in that experience. If you can actually start naming it, then you can start creating different language around it, which leads to deeper levels of understanding. And then you can start moving into the body transmutation process. But again, these are what these podcasts are for. This is what frequency work is for. Grab anything from the shop, anything that will help you shift this shutdown response, specifically with people pleasing, self-sabotage, and not having yourself, etc. So the next thing I want to move into is emotional intelligence being a trauma response versus embodiment. So when does your empathy come from coherence, and when does it come from collapse? So trauma-driven emotional intelligence, aka hypervigilance mistaken for maturity, looks like this type of expression. If I stay calm, I'll stay safe. If I meet their needs, I won't be left. It's essentially a cognitive layer. The emotional layer will look like blunted inner awareness, okay? It's like a merged affect, low self-reference. This is the emotional. The merged affect is the numbing. Okay, that's the fawn response. Somatically, look for tightness in your chest. Look for digestion issues, tightness in your solar plexus, contraction there, tension around the eyes, TMJ, okay, any kind of jaw tightness or misalignment in the jaw. Look for structural subluxations, which is just energetic interference in the bones. Behaviorally, look for people pleasing, appeasement, over-functioning, premature soothing. So you are anticipating the problem. You're anticipating specific shutdown or tragedy that will happen. And you become so good at anticipation that you are already prepared for the worst case scenario. And that comes with people around you. So you're like, well, if I follow this all the way to the end, this all the way to the end, and this all the way to the end, through perfectionism and performance and people pleasing, I won't be let down, because the nervous system physically cannot handle that again. It will just reinforce the root mechanism of fawning as a survival strategy. So the body learns that this type of attunement equals safety. So you preemptively regulate others to reduce that threat. So connection, therefore, equals compliance, love equals labor, and then peace equals performance. Those are all very core distortion patterns, okay? Those are all illusory. Those are not what we want, okay? Those are inverted experiences. Embodied emotional intelligence, which is a pillar of Super Freak, aka nervous system coherence, okay, and attuned boundaries, looks like this. Okay, cognitively, I can feel what's happening and choose how I respond. Empathy doesn't mean merging. Emotionally, it looks like clear access to your felt senses, your ability to name and navigate internal states. It's a superpower. Somatically, okay, look out for an open chest, grounded in your pelvic floor, a grounded spine, you know, a fluid diagram, soft masseter muscles of the jaw. Look for these things, feel these things. I feel very grounded and embodied. I don't have resistance or tightness. Behaviorally, it is you're responsive, okay? You're responsive without over-responsibility, and you have emotional boundaries with flexibility. So you keep your heart open, okay? Or let's say you keep your boundaries up, but your heart soft. So you are boundaried and available because you can hold both of these experiences simultaneously. You can hold a boundary and keep your heart open simultaneously because there's not all this distortion nonsense running in the background. So your energetic field will be very distinctly self-signaled. So when I talk about being self-sourced and being able to recharge, clean up yourself, recharge, level up, and then move into different feedbacks, that's what I'm talking about when it comes to your energetic field expression. The root mechanism here will be the integration of patterning as early as you can do it. So the nervous system no longer equates relational safety with self-erasure. That's not what we want. The truth of that dynamic, therefore, looks like connection equals coherence, right? Love equals mutual resonance. Peace equals nervous system clarity. And I don't know about you, but that is the holy grail for someone like me who has had a tremendously wiry, off the charts with levels of unsafety nervous system for majority of my life. It wasn't until I started finding different access points within myself through various types of work, and especially what I've created now with Super Freak, that I've been able to drastically reprogram and recalibrate the container, right? The electrical system, this information, this software program that's been running on so much deep-seated safety strategies, that now I can just be safe and feel safe to receive and have it all without having to compromise who I am at source level. And that's where we want to be. And it's a constant recalibration process. You're never fixed. It's not one and done. Okay. I can't just wave my magic wand and make you have a regulated nervous system suddenly. But with this type of work, it's the fastest work that I've found to be able to deprogram and then rewire, reprogram you close to get you closer to your original blueprint. And that includes the epigenetic, kind of the mind-body epigenetic reprogramming of all of these things, and especially recalibrating your nervous systems for more synchronicity, joy, more of your own light. So I'm going to leave you with a few questions. Okay? So how do you discern between these two things? Ask yourself, do I feel relief or depletion after supporting somebody emotionally? Do I need others to feel okay so I feel okay? Or so I can feel okay? Is my insight a spontaneous truth or a preemptive strategy? Am I choosing to attune and feel into, or do I feel compelled to? That one's a bit more advanced. And maybe, likely, the most revealing of them all is, when was the last time I let someone attune to me? All right, you guys. Re-listen to this, take those questions down, feel into them, and I'll see y'all in a couple weeks. Big love.